Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to rockauto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write CarCast in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, here with our friend Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're a man down today. Goldberg has he has a doctor appointment to examine his knee. There was damage done on his knee. For those of you thinking, hey, it was part of this show. It's SummerSlam. No, it's not just part of the show. The man's down. What are you going to do? He's injured. But glad to have you on the show. It's It feels like it's been a minute, although I think you were on not too long ago. You've just been running around doing a bunch of things, going kind of above and beyond, doing some fun stuff. We talked about initially, I think last week we talked about the initial reactions to the Ford Raptor, the revised Raptor Gen 3, I guess, Raptor we call it. And we've kind of been waiting on this Tesla Plaid, and you've been doing a deep dive into this thing and having some fun with it for sure. So we definitely want to talk about that. And then if not this week, we'll get into it next week. But our friends over at Hennessy just dropped off the Hennessy TRX, the Ram TRX, the Mammoth 1000. It is a 1,000 horsepower TRX. And it's been quite modified with a Magnuson supercharger, I believe, and a number of other bits and stuff in it. And it is impressive to say the least. Now, that being said, we all know that Goldberg has been testing his Goldberg's Garage package. It's a modified supercharger package for his TRX. And now that testing has been done, he sent it back for twin turbo. So his like 980 horsepower wasn't enough. I think he's going for 12 or something hundred horsepower. And by the way, just to follow up, Alistair, his charger that we talked about, he's doing the twin turbo charger, has the parachute in the back and the big tires and the roll cage and stuff. So the initial dyno test came in at about 1,500 horsepower, and then when they spun a bearing and rebuilt the motor, they did some other mods. And I think on race gas, I think he said he's putting down just over 1,700 at the tires. It's like 1,723 or something like that. So and he's got
I always thought the TRX needed more power. I thought that was his fundamental issue.
Yeah, right. That's my thought too. Was the TRX at 707 horsepower was a little light, little weak sauce, and now they got the hot sauce in there because it's fun. I just opened it up. I was just getting on the freeway this morning, and there's just a small bit on the small freeway where there's no traffic before you just pile into LA traffic and you can't do anything. And just put it in its sport mode as instructed by the guys at Hennessy. Put it in sport mode, hammer it down, and it's a little scary. It's a little scary fast. And maybe it doesn't need the big off-road tires, and it's started kind of weaving in the road a little bit, but man, this thing just squats down and takes off. So but it did it with a bunch of fabulous noise. Unlike what you've been driving recently, with basically zero noise. Let's get into that a little bit. You got your hands on a Tesla Plaid. I'm sure your friends over at Tesla handed one over, no questions asked.
Yeah, they haven't really been speaking to us since we did the EV range testing. So, we ended up, there are companies out there, I don't know if you've used them, Matt, but they basically supply cars to the industry. So if you're developing X car, you can actually rent from them one of the rivals, because sometimes it's difficult for manufacturers to actually get hold of the competitive vehicles. So we used them and we actually rented this car for about 5 days. It cost us $4,000, so quite a chunky investment. So we did all sorts of things with them. Full instrumented testing. We did some drag racing that we can get into and everything else. But finally, got our hands on all 1,020 horsepower. Well, that's Tesla's claim anyway of the Plaid. And believe me, it feels like 1,020 horsepower. It's a very different experience, because you're right about, I mean, obviously I've driven the TRX and other cars, GT500 we own and things like that, with getting on 700-800 horsepower. But when you get that instantaneous shove of an EV and everything's silent, yeah, it's an experience unlike anything you've had before. It's extraordinary. And there's a fantastic footage in the film of Jonathan Alfarland, our head of testing, where we run all our figures. That Plaid is right on the edge of what's feasible at our test track. But we gave it a go and is able to do the quarter mile successfully. But we were pulling just over 150 at the end of the quarter, which is pretty hairy on a relatively tight straight at the test track.
So walk us through it. You guys got a hold of this thing. You grabbed a rental Tesla Plaid, and the Plaid, is it outfitted? There's not like a Plaid competition package or sport package or whatever. So you get the Plaid and that's pretty much equipped with everything. There's not really many options you can get. I don't know if like their autopilot crap is optional still.
The full self-driving, which is anything but. That's a $10,000 optional. I think you can subscribe monthly now. The only other thing that you can do, which was fitted to our car, and I suspect most people will go for, is the bigger wheel rims, which actually has quite a big impact on the range. But those, most people will go for it because it looks cool and probably gives you a slight. I haven't driven it on the smaller rims. So that's basically it. Yeah, apart from a different color of paint, different wheel rims, and away you go. So this one, the one that we had is, you know, $135,000. 1,020 horsepower,
and then you could add their autopilot or whatever for $10,000. So you can spend $145,000 on this thing if you really want to.
Or you rent it, yeah.
Yeah, or you rent it.
Or I mean, sorry, you lease. Yeah, you lease can now it. Lease the autopilot thing. So, yeah.
Oh right, yeah, the autopilot thing. Can you? Yeah. Okay, so
yeah, subscribe is the word I'm looking for.
Subscribe,
Matt.
There you go.
Subscribe to it rather than purchase that. Right.
You could get your monthly payment onto that. Start with the car. Some of the differences of the car. Like one of the things I noticed was a bit of a fender flare going on. Is that just in the rear? Is that on all four corners? Are there some subtle differences on the car? Right.
There are some subtle differences. You get a slightly flared wheel arches, basically, so that you can accommodate the larger wheels and tires. You get a modest sort of diffuser type thing at the rear to help with the airflow. Now, in theory, the Plaid will do 200 miles an hour, but at the moment, Tesla hasn't quite sorted that out. So it's limited electronically to 163 at the moment. And apparently, if you buy one at some point in the future, they will update the software and now you can do 200. But you know, when that will be, who knows? And then apart from a really subtle little carbon fiber lip spoiler on the trunk, that's pretty much it, which I kind of like. I said in the video that we did on the YouTube channel right now, the full review. I said it actually reminds me of the Mercedes 500E from the 90s, which Porsche developed for Mercedes and was a really cool car, proper sleeper Q car, as we used to say in Europe. And I like that. It doesn't, I mean, there's a very tiny plaid badge on the trunk, but that's it. So compared to something like an M5 or a AMG Mercedes, it's really subtle, really understated.
So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, might as well just jump into to the performance of this thing. In your video, you did a full, you know, you did a full walk around and you did brought it out to your test track, and you had your team out there as well. And your test driver started it off with the drag racing. And, you know, as you can imagine, it's impressive, right? It's all-wheel drive. It's, I guess, three motors. Are they all three motors, or were there four motors ever in a Model S?
No, I mean, the Plaid is the first to have three motors, so you got one at the front, two at the rear.
Okay, gotcha. Oh, what was the previous one? Single motor or dual motor?
No, they've been, I can't remember if there was ever an S with a single motor. I forget now, but basically the choice today is either two motors. Well, everything's got all-wheel drive, but it's either two motors or three on the Plaid.
Okay. And it's putting down
1,020 horsepower is what Tesla's claiming.
1,020 horsepower. I don't know how we calculate torque on those things, but what is the sort of the translation of torque?
I believe the torque is around 1,050.
Okay.
Pounds feet. And obviously that's, it's a different kind of torque. You know, that's an instantaneous torque as well, which just kind of heightens the feeling of power or feeling of performance.
And how'd you guys end up doing in the quarter mile? I mean, the video's out there. You guys should definitely watch it because it's a good deep dive into this vehicle. Go ahead and tell us how you did out there.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is where we get into Tesla's approach to PR, if you like. You know, most manufacturers, Porsche particularly, will tend to understate their performance claims. Tesla tends to go in the opposite route. And they had a real headline claim for this car that it would do 0 to 60 in 1.99 seconds. And this was what was being bandied about on Twitter. And it's the fastest acceleration car of all time. I know there's some debate about the Rimac at the moment, but arguably the Rimac isn't actually a proper production car and certainly isn't being delivered yet. So for now, the Plaid still owns that mantle. Tesla claimed 1.99 seconds, 0 to 60, and a quarter in, I think, 9.23, I think it was, at about 155. Yeah, 9.23 at 155. The challenge with that is that Tesla did two things. One, they included rollout, which is something, obviously, that happens in drag racing but doesn't happen in the real world. So we never include rollout. And secondly, they used a pre-prepared surface. So they basically used a prep drag strip.
Right. So they
give you additional challenge.
They went to a drag strip and they basically said, we brought the car here. And, you know, we all know, anybody who's looking at these numbers knows what that means. It's a drag strip. So we know there's a bit of a rollout. We know that it's a stickier track. There's rubber down. There's the, you know, the track is prepped for it. So, you know, it's an aggressive number. I agree with you. Like, why advertise the, you know, the drag strip number? But I guess in some, I guess Dodge did it right with the Demon, right? They're like, hey, you know, in drag strip form with the tires and the skinnies in the front that you can buy, that thing runs nines.
I guess my point would be that the Demon was very set up as a specialist car for drag strips. That the Plaid is basically being set up as an everyday car for driving around the city. But I take your point. So I can give you our figures if you like. So our track is basically asphalt as you would find it on a normal street. We calculate the rollout, so I can give you that. But we don't tend to quote that because obviously there's no rollout on the high street. So we hit 0 to 60 in 2.3, quarter mile in 9.4 at 150.8. So basically, we were just about 0.3 down on Tesla's claim. But if you factor in the rollout, because we can calculate it, rollout was worth 0.24 of a second. So we're basically 0.1 slower than Tesla. but we're on a proper street surface. So yes, we're slower than Tesla, but it's still an astonishing figure.
A tenth, you're talking about a tenth at these speeds. That's impressive. I mean, impressive for Tesla's claim and impressive for the car to be able to recreate it as well. And, you know, impressive for your driver to nail that number. And just out of curiosity, obviously, the video needs to be edited to make it entertaining and time constraints. How many times did you run it? I mean, was it within a tenth or two every time or not?
So the How video consistent? Is actually, I think you've seen the film, Matt, of the actual testing. And Jonathan, we had a GoPro running on his run. And his reaction is extraordinary because he said that the test track's quite narrow. So, of course, once you get above 100, everything, you kind of field of vision narrows anyway. And his reaction is fantastic, way better than mine. I was hosting the film, but his reaction is 10 times better than mine. And also you can see the adrenaline. I mean, he's a pretty built guy, and you can actually see the kind of like the muscles.
I see his death grip on the wheel going,
Yeah, we can come on to the yoke in a minute. But but yeah, I mean, we were just like, again, 1.5 tenths behind Tesla's quarter and, 151. And what's interesting is, most EVs, they're very fast off the line, but then once you get above like 60 miles an hour or something, they start to tail off in performance. This thing doesn't. It just keeps pulling and pulling and pulling. And we did do a series of runs and didn't suffer too much degradation. When we took it drag racing, which is another film that we've done, which we can talk about, that we did feel a bit of a performance drop off as the charge went down, as the day went on. We did start to notice that it wasn't quite pulling as hard as it as hard it has, but you know, crazy, crazy figures. And you know, the fact that it is so accessible is, you know, it is basically like a 1,000 horsepower golf cart. I mean, we've talking about the TRX, you know, what you were saying about coming off the highway. I had a TRX on the Willow Springs the other week, and you know, it's a handful. And you know, you put your foot down the TRX, there's a cacophony of noise and things squirming around a little bit. Same with a supercar, McLaren, or even something like an M5. It's a very visceral experience. You're very conscious of a lot of noise, a lot of movement, everything else.
Yeah.
This thing just squats and goes. So I think people will get into trouble with this thing because you really have to recalibrate your brain to understand how fast you're going and what it's doing, because it's utterly fuss-free. There's plenty of grip. And you have to go through this whole process before you can actually do a run. The car like trips itself. It cools the batteries. I think that took 7 minutes before it actually was ready to go. Then it lowers itself on the air suspension into what they call cheetah mode. Like, there's a whole palaver. If you ever turned up at a drag strip with it on a normal day, it would be a disaster because you'd be sat there on the line for 10 minutes with like everybody getting super pissed off behind you. So it's a whole thing. I mean, it's pure theater. And as we say, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous. The whole thing is like, how can we make as much noise on Twitter as possible and then engineer a car backwards from there?
Yeah. It's interesting because I saw the bit about prepping the car. The car has to, like, you know, get the batteries to the proper temperature and it sits itself down. This isn't like launch control or some drag race mode. And, you know, in a lot of the cars we've seen today, Porsches and muscle cars and Mustangs and Dodge and all that stuff. And there was another video floating around of the Rimac versus the Plaid. But the way that was cut together was like, let's just bring them to the line. You good. Thumbs up and drag race. They didn't sit there and go, all right, give the Plaid 9.5 minutes to figure itself out. They get itself repped. It has to stretch first. So they kind of either skipped that or whatever. But although I don't know that they were going quite as fast as what you were going. Maybe if it's not as prepped, and maybe this is a question, as you said, when you get into the drag race video, if you just brought the Tesla out as fast as it can go without doing the full prep, I mean, does it run 950s, 980s, or is it, you know, still pretty close?
It's a good question, right? And I've driven it in that trim, both on the road and on our track, and actually, you know, To sort of just jump in and drive it, you probably wouldn't tell the difference. I mean, it is on the road, it's absurd because it's just way too quick for anything. And what you don't get, as again, is that kind of supercar theater. You know, it's just a big 4,800-pound, you know, four-door sedan. Do it, you know, with 1,000 horsepower. So actually, you end up just sort of tickling it around town. And what is actually, to Tesla's credit, it's not difficult to drive. The throttle modulation and things like that, it's not that you're sort of scared of the car because it's so powerful. Actually, you can drive it around at 20 miles an hour, which, let's face it, most people buying this car are gonna do it in Palo Alto or wherever it may be. And, you know, I just came to the conclusion, it's, if you look at the grip, I think it did 1.02 on 2G on our lateral grip test, and that's the same as an M5. We did braking tests. It was marginally behind an M5. So there's tons of grip. You know, it's a very competently engineered car, but I wouldn't say it's fun to drive. And the way that we kind of describe it in the film is it's like an electric muscle car. You know, like old-fashioned American muscle cars were great at going a straight line, probably had grip, but weren't that much fun to drive. And this is the same, insanely fast, but it always feels like a big, heavy sedan. It's not as, if you're going around the corners, I don't think it's as much fun to drive as a Model 3, which is a lot lighter and more agile and nimble and that sort of thing. So, okay, you know, but I don't think it's as much fun as an M5 or an AMG Mercedes.
But if you compare it to something with a similar weight, how does it, if you say Tesla Plaid versus Lamborghini Urus?
I think the Urus is more fun to drive. And obviously you've got the noise and everything. I was really impressed by the Urus.
Yeah, the noise is fantastic in that vehicle. But I don't know, I'm guessing they're probably somewhere around the same weight.
Yeah, they probably are, Matt. And I think the Tesla feels a little bit, doesn't feel as agile as, I mean, Lambo did, they did a fantastic job with the Urus, the way that it drives. And then we get into the yoke. I don't think the yoke helps with that experience either. And maybe the sort of the way that it brakes, and there's just the model, don't get me wrong, the Model S is extremely competent through the corners. There's tons of grip. It will hang on well. You know, then you get this sort of, you can't turn the stability control off, but it's got torque vectoring at the rear, which basically means it's desperately trying to move the power around to improve the agility through corners. And that doesn't work massively well in this car. It's only functioning on the rear. So, you know, I don't want to overstate it. You know, you get into it, you'll have a smile on your face because it's so crazy fast and it's such an experience. But it's not an M5 rival in the way that it kind of goes around a track or something like that.
Okay, well, fair enough. I mean, it's a good thing to note, and it's a good comparison, but is that what Tesla was even claiming? They're just saying, we've got a really fast sedan, and we've made some mods to it. I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm sort of behind on this, but I never really thought of the Model S as a super handling, high-performance sedan. I never thought it... Speed-wise, right, it's fast. I get it. They're fast, and that's fun. But I never would think, oh, should somebody get an M5 or should somebody get the Model S? I don't know. I just kind of felt like, you know, throwing around. I mean, look, what we're talking about are super sedans, so how much track time you're really going to do in them. You know, there are a few people for sure, but, you know, most people tend to pick up their muscle car, their sports car, and hit the track. You know, every time I do a track day at Willow Springs, granted, only a couple times a year, it's a bunch of Porsches and Mustangs and Corvettes and stuff, and I'm usually the guy that shows up in, like you said, like an Urus press car or some crazy SUV because, you know, like I've been out there with the Alfa Romeo SUV. I've been out there with the Lamborghini SUV, you know, because I had the opportunity to go, oh, if I'm going to go out there, let's try to bring something that no one else is going to bring. And sure enough, I'm the only one out there with one of those things. You know, it's not that they don't perform. It's just not what's the common use of those cars.
I think it's a fair point. I mean, if you look at the way they set it up, you know, the seats are, you know, these are not chunky Recaros with lots of side support. They're sort of comfy executive chairs. So I don't think they've set it up that way. I think it's just when you develop a performance sedan with 1,000 horsepower, maybe it comes with it a certain sort of mindset that this thing is going to be, you know, performing in a certain way. And they could have gone in that direction. I mean, it's got tons of grip. you know, you could have easily sort of retuned the interior a little bit to make it feel more aggressive, if you like, more more sporting. But they haven't done that. Instead, they've
right.
The big thing inside is the yoke. And maybe we should talk about the yoke.
Yeah, just 1 second. Let me get into this Craig Pocket Hole Jig, the 520 Pro. Now anyone can easily create perfect, strong pocket hole joints with the Craig Pocket Hole Jig 520 Pro. It's the most versatile pocket hole jig yet. It works with a wide variety of materials. It's great for all types of indoor and outdoor wood projects. The Craig Pocket Hole Jig 520 Pro comes with everything you need. It has the drill and driver bits, a material gauge, a Craig Classic face clamp, a 100 Craig pocket hole screws, and a project plan. It retails for just $99.99. It's available nationwide at Home Depot, Lowe's, and other home centers, woodworking, and hardware stores. You can build pocket hole projects anytime, anywhere. Learn more at craigtool.com. That's KREGtool.com. Yes, to your point about the interior is you've got this incredibly powerful, high-performance sedan, and we've come to expect with the high-performance variants of vehicles that you get more of a sportier seat, or you get some different things going on, maybe easily accessible controls to things like, you know, Ferrari and the steering wheel knob and, you know, an M button, you know, or, you know, a sport button or just something that's a little more accessible than on the normal variants of those cars. And the Tesla doesn't quite seem to have that. Now, I know we want to get into this lack of steering wheel thing. It looks interesting. There's kind of a reason why cars didn't go down this route, right?
There is, man.
Because it's stupid.
Because it's stupid. Everyone, because I've realized, I don't know whether you've seen my social or anything, or Edmund's social the last 24 hours, but we're getting so much Teslarati issues going on. I'm getting absolutely vilified across the world. But I actually got, when I was talking about the skid pad, I said 1.02. I actually checked 1.06. But a nice little factoid, the peak longitudinal G, so that's the G that you feel off the line, 1.26. So you're actually getting more G this way, longitudinal. I don't know why I'm making hand signals. It's a podcast. But you're getting more G off the line longitudinally than you would laterally in like a steering pad situation, a skid pad situation. So there's a factoid. But yeah, sorry, back to the joke.
The joke. I'm not sure what the motivation here is. You made a good point in your video. It's, you know, it's just to cause conversation. It's, you know, you're right, to get a Twitter discussion, to get a social media discussion going on. I don't think it's practical. Look, if you got into the car and you said, hey, you only need to turn the wheel 90 degrees. That's it. That's the maximum it does. It's basically an F1 car at this point. Then I would say, this could be interesting. That's probably a little too aggressive a steering ratio for most people around town. But if you said it only has to go 90 degrees, and I'm doing hand gestures as well, if you only have to go 90 degrees to do a full turn, then sure, Graham Rahal is going to love it and go, hey, this is just like my Indy car. But as you're doing the 3-point turn and looking for the rest of the wheel, I don't know what you're doing at that point, just slapping onto the top of the flat part of the wheel. It seemed interesting, but so the question is, I'll definitely get into it and talk about it, but when you're driving it around town and you're doing just normal turns, just a sort of a 90 degree turn, you're coming down the street, you're turning into the neighborhood, you know, a lot of cars, you can kind of get that done without hand over hand. But you can slide your hand around on the wheel, the steering wheel. So aside from the 3-point turn and the hokey forward and reverse, you should explain to people who haven't seen the video yet, can you just drive it and turn? I mean, are your arms crossing if you just do a 90-degree turn, if you just turn into a Ralph's parking lot?
Yeah, well, I tried. I did that. I mean, we drove most of the film was actually shot at track, but I did take the car out on the road. And yeah, if you're just driving around, like, you know, highway on ramps and things like that, it's most of the time it's okay. Although those highway things where, you know, you do like a 180.
Yeah.
You know, if you're changing direction or that sort of thing, going south or north, then, you know, it can be an issue. And I think if you're trying to maneuver in a car park, something like that, it's a problem. And then we took it on our test track. We have a low grip tight handling circuit, which is designed to simulate driving on ice, that kind of thing. It's a very low grip surface. And we took it on there just to get a feel for the steering. And there it just fell apart. And I posted something on my Instagram, We've Run Cars, if you were there, well, Matt. And that went live yesterday. And I put it on Twitter, and that's really blown up. Then Edmunds, we've shared it as well there. And you can see it in the film, you can see it on social. It just doesn't work. And one of my thoughts is this thing actually legal? Because you are conscious, if you're just on the highway or something, fine. But you'd be surprised around town how much you naturally just kind of feed the wheel and stuff if you're doing tight maneuvers, probably without even thinking about it. And, you know, it's a big issue, and especially a big issue in something that fast. You would get used to it after a while, but it's never a better solution than a steering wheel. It's always going to be a worse solution. And the other thing that was driving me nuts was they've got rid of column stalks altogether. So everything is either on the steering wheel or on the screen. On the touchscreen. So if you want to use the indicators, they're on the that's for your left thumb. So your left thumb does both turn right and turn left, which feels a bit counterintuitive instead of having right under your right thumb and left under your left thumb.
Yeah. Okay.
But then also when you are trying to feed this thing, you know, you're bipping the horn, you're trying to grab the wheel and the horn's going off and the windscreen wipers are going off because they're all like little haptic controls on the yoke itself. So I was trying to do this thing. And again, it happened to me on the road as well. And suddenly I'm like, why is this guy? I've got the indicator on. I hadn't realized. And then the windscreen wiper's going and then the horn playing. It's it's nuts. And what really frustrates me about this car and what I'm taking so much grief for on the YouTube comments and everything else is, you know, it just feels like they sat down and said, how can we generate as much free marketing dollar for this, for the Model S, which is now an old car. It came out in 2012. How can we create as much buzz around the Model S as possible for an old aging car? Because Mercedes is bringing out the EQS, Porsche has the Taycan, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, right, we're going to get the steering wheel from Knight Rider's kit and stick it in a 1,000 horsepower sedan. And I just think it's stupid. I think it's dangerous. I think it's irresponsible. And it's just a bad, it's a bad answer to a question nobody asked.
Okay. Well, for you? I agree with you. I think the execution of these features is a little weird. You know, like, why do that? But we do see time and time again car companies dragging out the life of a vehicle platform and just throwing bits and pieces onto it to try to make it more fun, right? Like you said, Model S is getting a little long in the tooth. You know, the overall platform. So you do these updates, right? I mean, look at anything from Dodge. You know, I don't know what version of the, you know, how long the Challenger's been out or the Charger's been out, but it's been a minute. And they're like, it's fine. We'll just keep adding horsepower and fender flares and it'll sell like hotcakes. And it does.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's, I don't know, it's arguably well executed. You know, the Challenger does well. The Charger sells twice as many, and it does well. And it's, you know, it's just done in a way where people are like, okay, it's cool. I like it. It makes sense. It's more power. It's wider. Handles better. Like, we're just making improvements to it over time. You know, look at all the – look at Viper. You know, how long has Viper been out? And they just kept adding more and more horsepower to it. I think tell me about the on the screen on the dash, there's sort of this forward and reverse slider. So you got to kind of slide your finger up and down for forward and reverse. I'm sure you can explain it better than I can. But my thought on it was, yes, you were on the track and you did the low grip stuff, but I'm just thinking you're kind of in a rush. People are backed up. They want your spot at Whole Foods, and you've got to back out and pull forward or do a 3-point turn before traffic comes. Like, that's the part where it seems weird. Like, I get the track in icy conditions is crazy, but what if you're just literally have to do a 3-point turn in the middle of the road? It's not just the yoke, but you, now you have to let go of that thing, which I guess you're going to have to do anyway because there's only half the things to grab onto, and then slide it back and forth. Like, I know you're on the track, but did you just go to Whole Foods or something and try to get through that parking lot?
Yeah, I mean, like, I took it to a Tesla supercharger and moved it around a car park, that kind of thing. The way it works is the car is supposed to sense whether it kind of predicts which way you want to go. So let's say that you pull nose first into your garage at night. The car sensors will pick up that you're parked nose onto the wall and then automatically select reverse. So if you then hit the brake pedal, it will go into reverse automatically and away you go. That works pretty well most of the time, but not all the time. If there's like a fence or something rather than a wall, it would seem to be getting a little bit confused. Failing that, you go into, if you want to choose yourself, maybe you're in a parking spot where you could go forward or you could go back, then you have to go to the touchscreen, which is now a big portrait screen similar to what it is in the Model 3. And then you swipe up to go back. You swipe down to go back and then up to go forwards. And obviously there's only one gear forwards and one gear back. And then it will engage the right gear and then away you go. Now, there's a question then of what happens if the screen fails, as it's been wont to do in Teslas over the years. Then there is apparently a redundancy underneath where the phone charger is, which should give you additional touch controls. And in theory, they come on and activate if the screen goes dead, but we weren't able to test that. It's another little quirk. I mean, the Model 3 I have has a column stalk, and I would much prefer that as a solution. And again, I think it's just sort of getting into a level of gimmickry that doesn't, you know, I understand it's a talking point, but it doesn't feel like a particularly good solution. I mean, I don't want to feel like, you know, I feel like I'm beating up on the car. And there's a lot of things Tesla still does really well. The supercharger network is fantastic. It almost hit its EPA range figure, which is the first Tesla ever has. But I think we're only 3 miles shy. So it'll do 350 miles in the real world, which for such a big, heavy, powerful car is exceptional. So there's a lot of things it does right. It's obviously very spacious. You can get 4 or 5 people into it. Plenty of trunk space.
It's cool. Hitting the numbers. It's hitting the performance numbers. Like you said, all things considered, if it was apples to apples, they're basically almost dead on, maybe a tenth.
Yeah, and it's 1,000, you know, you are getting 1,000 horsepower car for 140 grand, which is a huge sum of money. But, you know, what do you have to pay for 1,000 horsepower in a gas car? You're getting into, unless you're doing like the Hennessy, but I guess the Hennessy's more than 130 grand, isn't it? Or roughly, how much is the Hennessy truck?
Yeah, actually, I believe this truck came in, don't quote me on it, I'll look at the numbers that they gave me, but I think it was about $150,000.
So yeah. And you're right going into the tuner market and everything else.
Yeah, it's right
so,
around.
So, yeah, I mean, it's at one level, it's a hell of a thing. I just, you know, my broader feeling is that what does it offer over a standard Model S? You know, the standard Model S is $40,000 less, travels further on a single charge, the range is longer, is still insanely quick. It's still a 3 second to 60 car. So, you know, actually above that, the Plaid is all about the ego. It's all about talking about it in the cocktail bar that you had to buy the Plaid. I know we can say that about other supercars, but it really stood out for me. The other thing, Matt, that troubled me was build quality again. I mean, we keep saying this, but there were significant issues with this car. Trim coming away, panel gaps not right, things not lining up that should have lined up. And, you know, 140 grand. And the material choice was really little better than my Model 3, which is 40 grand. And, you know, as newcomers hit the market, the EQS we've driven, the Mercedes is, you know, the quality inside that or a Porsche Taycan is way beyond the Tesla. And maybe, you know, this is an older car now. There'll come a point where Tesla can't just keep claiming about, you know, 0 to 60 and, you know, fancy steering wheels. There'll come a point where things like build quality, interior quality, all that sort of stuff, techno, you know, will actually become, you know, a really big factor because they've had the market to themselves and now competition is coming really fast.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get into some of the other drag racing things that you guys have done with it. Before, let me tell you guys about Geico. Whether you own your home or rent your home, we know it can be a lot of hard work, but you know it's easy. It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, so all things considered, you brought the car out, you did your tests, you did your quality tests, you did your performance tests. But and as fun as that is, then you took it out to, I guess, Willow or something and had the fun version. What'd you guys do out there?
So this was a genuine challenge for us. It's like, what can you actually put against a Plaid from a performance perspective, you know, and the Rimac is another EV, but as I say, isn't available yet. And also is a, you know, multi-million dollar supercar. So we actually got a guy called Chris Moore, who's a fantastic character. He's a professional bike. When I say bike, motorcycle drag racer. He's got a fantastic YouTube channel, really charismatic guy. And he agreed to come along, and then we borrowed, Suzuki Hayabusa and Kawasaki ZX14R, because they were the only things that actually were also running 9 second quarters. And we all went up to, well, I say all, I didn't do this, but I missed out on the fun, unfortunately. But we went to the streets of Willow and, Big Willow, proper Willow Springs, and actually did a drag race there. Now, the challenge for the bike, the first film is actually live now, and there's another drag race to come. But, the challenge for the bike is that it was really windy, and actually, as the front wheel started to lift, he was getting a side wind, which was trying to swipe the bike out. But it was still remarkably close. Without giving the game away, the plaid marginally wins, but it was pretty extraordinary to watch the footage of the two of them going side by side.
It's fantastic. Are you guys going to do some other drag racing? Are you going to find other things to go up against the Plaid?
We've got one more, we've got one more coming out later this week, which will be a good one, and actually illustrates just how fast that plaid actually is. But then, you know, unfortunately, it had to go back. But I didn't tell you, Matt, that it made me sick, which is an interesting conundrum.
What happened?
So you'll see this in the film because they kept the cameras running on me, which is slightly unfair. But I just started on the track driving the Plaid around our handling circuit. And initially it was driving for camera, then it was basically on my own. And I just started to feel more and more sick. Now, I don't get travel sick. I don't even get sick on a boat. And it just started to get worse and worse. You know, you get that awful feeling where you get like fluid in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And you start, you know, and you're just like, oh, I'm going to have to stop. So I had to come back to the pits, and a camera guy that we were working with, we'd used our Model Y that we own as a support vehicle, and he'd been complaining about the same thing in our Model Y. And I talked to a couple of other people, and apparently this is a thing, because your body, your brain is used to noise and everything else. The fact that you're taking away that that sense can sort of confuse and baffle your brain, and then the fact that you're going so fast and there's so much G-force going on. Actually, I don't know whether like Formula E races and things like that have had similar problems, but it's something we're going to dig into a bit. But I was like, I mean, I was okay. Like, you know, bottle of water, 10 minutes later, I was fine. And I'm getting vilified for it on the YouTube comments. But it was a really weird sensation because it's not something that happens to me.
In regards to Formula E, that's an open cockpit car. And I was going to say, you're filming, you can't roll the window down. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of noise. So I feel like maybe if you got a little air, that would give your brain a sense of speed beyond just the vehicle moving.
That might be a really good point. That actually in a Formula E car, you've got, you know, you do have wind rushing. It's open cockpit. You've got a lot of additional sensor stuff going on. Whereas in a in the Tesla, you are sort of divorced from reality.
You know, if you think about like taking away one of the senses in this regard, Space Mountain at Disneyland. Space Mountain feels like it's a really fast roller coaster, but and if I got this correctly, if I remember this correctly, it's not quite as fast as you think it is. But what you can't see is they blow air on you at certain points of the track, so they're simulating a sense of speed without making the roller coaster go faster or whatever, for whatever reason, call it a safety issue, call it a timing issue or whatever. But they had to sort of simulate a sense of speed, because if they're basically taking some sound away or some vision in that regard away, what do? Right? You need to increase something. So maybe if you crack a window.
Yeah, that's really, I didn't know about Space Mountain, but that's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
How you're, and whether you just need your brain to kind of get used to the fact that we're all going to be flying around in EVs and one of your sensory perceptions has gone. I don't know. It was just really strange because I felt terrible for about 10 minutes.
Okay. So is there anything else to talk about on Tesla before we move on? So Plaid, badass vehicle, obviously performs. It's a monster for talk about bang for the buck. The yoke is a joke. And and it could make you sick. I don't know. Aside from that, it seems like an incredible performance.
It is. I mean, it is an experience like you've never had before. And, you know, you and I have been fortunate to drive lots of very fast cars. But just the instantaneous thrust and the lack of noise and everything else, and the fact that it's so accessible, you literally plant your foot and go. It is, you need to experience it, Matt. It's a different kind of thing. It really is. But there's also a point at which it's kind of killing, maybe this is a bigger conversation sometime, but, you know, when I grew up, it was like, oh, the F40 does 0-60 in 3.9, and the 959 is 4.1, and there was this kind of like performance race, and it was incredibly exciting. Now this car's come along and all EVs are doing 0-60 in like 3 seconds or something like that. It takes away that fun and that game that we all used to enjoy, because it's kind of like the end of performance, because there's just no point going faster than this. In fact, there's no point going this fast, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's for social media. Right.
Yeah.
It's part of the marketing buzz on it, right? Like, Tesla's been very creative with creating this type of buzz and never really spent money on marketing. You know, traditionally, maybe they do, you know, there's some sort of marketing going on, obviously, right? Influencers, social media, I don't know, the paid search, things like that. But they're just not running Super Bowl commercials. You know, it's just kind of a different approach to doing it. And they've been getting away with it.
Right. Yeah, they have. And you know, credit to them. I mean, I'm more, you know, often accused of being tough on them. And I think we're tough on them when things don't work. But yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenal story. The question will be, in the next 3 or 4 years, we just had a couple of guys at the Munich Auto Show this week. And, you know, Mercedes has rolled out an electric G-Wagon and an EQ, an electric E-Class. You know, the competition is coming and it's going to be superb. You know, and the question for Tesla will be, you know, where are all the new products? Where are the quality improvements? How are they going to sustain this in the next 5 years? And, you know, all the, you know, the Teslarati stuff and this extraordinary fan base, which jumps on everything that you do. And some of the stuff I'm getting on YouTube the commentary is downright abusive. And I don't think it does the brand any good either. And I think internally they kind of, Tesla will accept that as well. So it's going to be a fascinating 3 or 4 years for Tesla. Can they sustain the thing? And, you know, also the supercharger network, which is their trump card at the moment, you know, Electrify America and everybody else are going to catch up eventually. And at the moment, Tesla has a clear market lead and it's the main reason for buying a Tesla. But, you know, that will change over time as well. So where will Tesla be in 5, 10 years? It's a fascinating time. I mean, we talked about this before.
Yeah, well, they're definitely, like you said, they're definitely ahead of the game. There's a few things that, you know, as a company, I agree they should probably focus on, put their attention to, like you said, some of the build quality, some of the build materials, and if they get that right, that's a difficult car to surpass. You know, now it does take away from Mercedes and Porsche and Audi, which is banking on their build quality and build materials and the, you know, sort of the, you know, the history they've built as far as being a luxury brand. You know, so if Tesla can compete with it, now it's they could do very, I mean, obviously they do well, but the longevity of it is still, who knows?
Yeah, and then they still haven't got the overheads with, you know, they still got a great way of going to market that saves them money. They're not spending on the marketing that the old world is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still a lot of opportunities for them.
Like their infrastructure for dealers or whatever they're doing.
Their supercharger network, you know, it's just that developing cars is really expensive. And you just look at it and think, you know, where is the next Model S? The Cybertruck's been delayed for another year, you know, so that's not now coming out till the end of next year. So, you know, how do you sustain this extraordinary success? I mean, you know, Elon Musk and the whole team have done an incredible job of building a car brand. But, you know, it's going to be a tough few years ahead, I suspect.
All right, so let's turn the page real quick and tell us what you know about the new Raptor, third-gen Raptor.
Yeah, we drove that. Interesting you're talking about the TRX and the Hennessy. I mean, the Raptor's got half the power of the Hennessy. It's 450 horsepower,
yeah,
which these days doesn't sound like a lot. But Travis Langness from the team went to Vegas to drive it and, you know, came back impressed. Felt like done a really nice job with it. You know, it's a great off-road truck, but it's also very usable on the road. So it's a good thing. We have a video on our YouTube channel out about that now.
It looks interesting. We can't wait to get our hands on it. And people were asking, because we touched about it on it last week, that I thought it was coming out this summer, and then next summer was the Raptor R. But obviously, everything is delayed with chip shortages and things like that. So, I mean, it's just that's where we are with it. And as much as we'd like to say it's all going to get worked out soon, it's probably going to get worked out later.
It is. I mean, I finally just got a VIN number for the build of our Bronco,
yeah,
which we ordered. I can't even remember when we ordered it. But we were supposed to get it delivered last December. And I think if it's built in Michigan in November, it's probably going to land in LA in probably early December.
Yeah.
And we were kind of looking at this thing. And so it's a year late. And one of the guys in the office said, because I've been running the order, said to me, what roof have we got? And I said, you know what? I can't remember because I've changed the roof about four times. We started off with hard and soft top. Then we went to body color hard top maybe. Then we went to black. I genuinely can't remember what roof we had, because every time they rang me up, they said, just want the car as fast as possible. Don't care too much about the roof. Just give me the car. We'll add a soft top later.
Yeah.
And now I can't remember whether it's body color or whether it's black or whether it's the soft top.
Tell me, so you don't need a roof. You're in California. You don't need it.
Exactly. It was almost that point. Like, send it on. Mail order.
That's right. Just
post me the roof on.
You can send the car in August and send the roof in December. That would be fine. Okay, well, it sounds the Bronco, of course, obviously sounds interesting. People are starting to get them. Raptor sounds cool. Maybe Raptor R is going to be badass as well. There's a lot of the hardcore truck guys kind of getting into it some more and talking about the suspension, some of the changes, and how does it compare to TRX. And we touched on a little bit of that last week, but as we, you know, get to see the vehicle up close in person, I think we'll get into a little bit more. But should be kind of interesting. Let me tell you guys about Good Guys. The Good Guys Rod and Custom Association is coming to Loveland, Colorado. It's the 23rd Colorado Nationals, presented by Griot's Garage. It's at the Ranch Events Complex, September 10th through 12th. It's right around the corner, so you better hurry up. There's 2,000 classic cars and trucks on display with an autocross, a burnout competition, vintage dragster exhibition, and more. There's a huge swap meet and a specialty auto auction you'll want to check out. Bring the whole family. There's live entertainment. There's a model and pedal car display. There's a whole kids zone that's free. Speaking of kids, 6 and under get in for free to the event as well. But you can go to goodguys.com, use promo code CARCAST for $5 off your spectator ticket. So good-guys.com. Go on there, buy tickets, use promo code CARCAST, get $5 off your spectator ticket. All right. So we missing anything? We got edmunds.com/roadnoise. That's the big site you want to go to. Check out all the fun videos. We've got a Raptor video up there. We've got your Tesla video up there. You got your Tesla drag race video up there. That's been pretty new. I'm sure there's more.
Nissan Z, we just had a good look at. That was fun. I did a thing with the new Macan, or the facelifted Macan, the 2022, which is a really nice thing. So yeah, we've had like, you know, a few weeks of huge amounts of content. So yeah, lots going on.
I like the Porsche Macan. I think it's a good, fun vehicle, but I forgot which trim. I don't know if this new facelift, it's sort of the turbo version or whatever they call it now. One of them is goofy looking in the front. So I don't know.
Yeah, it has this like plastic, black plastic sort of smile.
Yeah.
And it's quite color dependent. If you get a, you know, if you get a black car, it goes away. So
yeah,
it's almost like they felt that they had to change something, and that was the easiest and cheapest thing to change. So it's still a nice thing, though. It's such a nice, as long as you can cope with the fact that it's not that big, it's such a nice car to drive.
Yeah, well, I drove the TRX here, and it's awfully big. And I'm looking down below me, I'm going, oh, that guy in the Macan, he's got it going on. He knows how to drive that thing. Easy to drive in this bumper-to-bumper traffic. Again, go to edmunds.com. You can follow Alistair on Twitter. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter. Tell him what you think of him and his driving skills. And and it is yoke versus joke.
Don't join. also, stop calling me old. That's the other thing. I mean, accused of being old. That's why I got sick, because I'm old.
Because you're old? Well, you did literally bring up in your video, you're like, here's the Model S debut with the young man with the dark hair to the man sitting in front of me with hasn't shaved in a few days, got a little salt and pepper up on top.
I was 12 years old, though, when I did the Model S in 2012.
When you did the Model S. Follow him on Instagram.
I'm still younger than you, Matt.
That's true. That'll always remain. That's how that works. So he's Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and he's Weaver on Cars on Instagram. And, of course, follow Edmunds everywhere. You guys will like what they're doing. We're having a lot of fun with it. So always a pleasure, my friend. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much.
I think that's pretty much it. Until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to rockauto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write CarCast in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.